Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
Metallica turned into a circus act, huh?
LA sucks!
Can I say something that I think is bullshit?
During Fool Agent?
Yes, we sell out.
He also told me he was on acid.
Yeah, you better wash that mic off.
I was gonna fill it up with my own urine.
Alcoholica.
And I talked about digging a hole in the fucking dirt and smoking hash through the ground.
All kinds of shit.
Shower filled with women.
Sit your ass down, Lara.
Shoot a pair of woman's legs walking down the street.
8 women washing you down at once, you know.
Coming up here, Lara points to me. See, he said there's Beavis, see? And there I am, right there.
And his skin is bubbling like on the Toxic Avenger.
Boyfriends and dads looking for me.
10 minutes?
Singing along, fucking along, doing this something the fuck along. Here we go!
Hey, this is Joe Sib, and you're listening to And Podcast for All with my two metal bros, Shane and Jeff. Enjoy.
Welcome back to And Podcast for All. I'm Shane Obershaw.
And I'm Jeff Winslow.
This is going to be hard to top because last week we just sat on your couch and rocked through the Never commentary.
Yeah, you know, it was really easy not having to, well, I don't want to say interview someone because we let them drive the show, but it was kind of nice just us having a good old-fashioned conversation.
Good old-fashioned chat with some Liquid Deaths, a couple Coors Lights, and yep. I think there's some more commentary in our future. I just, something tells me that that's going to happen again because people are digging it.
It seems like it, and, you know, I think as long as it keeps going well, we're going to have some cool things in store.
Twisting, turning through the commentary. Tonight is an absolute 180 from there because I was at your house last week. Now I'm back in Florida. We're back on Riverside.fm. We are going to the East Bay, as in Berkeley, Oakland part of the world.
Tonight it gets personal, as in personal to Metallica.
It gets real personal, and the interesting part about this, I never thought we'd talk to Miss Chloe Trujillo, Metallica family member.
Yep.
Another family member tonight, Mr. Kirk Hammett's brother.
His older brother, I believe.
His older brother. Jeff, do you have a brother or sister?
I don't. I'm an only lonely child.
You're an only spoiled child, correct? That's why you drive a BMW?
Hey, I bought that car myself.
But I bought this with my own money. God. I don't know why I just acted like Napoleon Dynamite, but that was a Napoleon voice, but that wasn't a Napoleon quote, was it?
No, it wasn't, but that you definitely had the Napoleon influence going. That's all right. I love that movie. That was perfect.
Whatever I feel like I want to do. God.
That's what I'm talking about.
Isn't that when he throws the steak at him?
Yeah, it's when Rico throws the steak at Napoleon. Oh! And then you hear Kippy goes, that's what I'm talking about.
Making some sweet moolah with Uncle Rico.
Oh, man. I need to watch that movie again. We're going to do a commentary episode on that movie.
The reason I was in my Napoleon voice, I just finished a 6-day trip, and my co-pilot on day one dropped the Napoleon quote.
Oh, so it's been...
It was on from there. So anything said, there was a Napoleon quote the last 6 days, literally every 15 minutes to do with something in the air, something in the hotel, something at a bar, something at a restaurant. It was ridiculous.
No more planes, trains, or vacation. It was all about Napoleon, huh?
I love when Kip's sitting at the computer and he's going, I love the way your sandy hair floats in the air. To me, it's just like a lullaby. I'm just flying by. Oh, so high. And then he says, like a kite.
Like a kite, yeah. I swear, every scene in that movie is so dry, but just so funny. Rex Quando.
Dang quesadilla.
What the flip is Grandma doing at the dunes?
She was on a date with her boyfriend.
Boyfriend?
Well, there's a lot you don't know.
When Kip runs over the Tupperware with the van and then just drives off.
With the creeper van with that dome window in the back corner. What kind of van is that, Mr. Car Guy?
I don't know if it's an old Dodge van or an old like GMC, but it looks like it could be an old Metallica tour van.
There's actually a name. Is that a Geronimo?
I honestly don't remember.
That's classic.
It's been a while since I've seen that movie. I would have to pop it in and look at
it. And it has that extended roof.
Yeah, the little, almost looks like it could be like the little sleeper area.
Coach would have put me in fourth quarter. I would have gone pro.
We would have gone to state. Would have gone pro. Back in 84, I could throw a pigskin a quarter mile.
You serious?
Oh, I'm dead serious.
I never thought our intro would turn into a Napoleon hour.
Yeah, see what happens when you've been flying God. For a week straight?
Oh, stupid thing doesn't work. He's got that metal rod between his legs.
Yeah, the time machine. He's like, heal.
And it's set to 82.
Oh, that's great.
And I think he says, stupid thing doesn't work. And then Rico pops in and goes, well, I could have told you that.
Yeah, well, I could have told you that. Genius.
Oh,
Why can't we make a movie that great?
Jeff, it looks like you don't have a job. I think you should go feed Tina.
Come get your dinner, you fat lard.
I made an infinity of these at scout camp.
Yeah, I made like an infinity.
Jeff, tell me again what you did last summer.
I was hunting wolverines. What'd you shoot it with? A flipping 12 gauge? Gosh.
They kept trying to attack my cousin. What the heck would you do in a situation like that? Yeah, what would you do?
Flipping 12 gauge. Oh, man.
Oh, my God. What were we talking about?
Man, we derailed off the crazy train, back onto the hate train, and then back off again.
Is Grandma there? No, she's getting her hair done. What do you need? 6 minutes later, and we're getting ready to introduce Kirk Hammett's brother. What happened?
I don't know, but I hope he's a Napoleon Dynamite fan.
Here's the deal. Mr. Richard LeCong from the East Side Bay Area, Kirk Hammett's brother, kind enough to join us. Dude, I've seen Richard on social media.
Me too.
Over the past, God, I want to say decade. And I think we have like 40 or 50 mutual friends.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure I've been friends with him for years. And to be honest, for a long time, I would see pictures of him and Kirk together, and I thought he was a super fan. I did not realize that they were related until a few years ago.
It's like, is this guy bought every Hardwired VIP experience there is because he's with Kirk once a month in a pretty cool picture?
Nope, he didn't buy nothing. He just got invited, walked right through the door, and said, oh, that's my brother. Do you think he looks at him as Kirk Hammett, the guy in Metallica, or that's just my younger brother who used to probably get on my nerves when we were kids?
I don't know. We're going to find out. But all the cool pictures of him, he's got an all-access laminate on. He's at S&M2. He's at that the Metalla Mansion at 3132. Remember when they had that party at the house after Record Store Day?
Yep.
I mean, he's been in some pretty cool private parties, man, but when you're Kirk's brother, I think you're invited to all those things.
And I'm sure he's going to have some pretty interesting stories to tell us.
I've never met Richard. I've seen him at gigs. I've seen him at events. We've never talked. And here we are, season 4, episode 7, Mr. Richard LeCong from the East Bay. I don't even know what we're going to talk about. I don't have a script for tonight. You can vouch to all our listeners. We don't have a set list. We don't have a game plan. I think this is just one of those things where we hit record and see what we're talking about.
Disclaimer, we don't ever have a script.
True.
We just have to make it known. I don't want people to think that we've turned into a teleprompt, podcast.
A podcast for all has turned into a circus act.
Look at this shit, Metallica turned into a circus act, huh?
Does anyone else want to try this shit?
Okay, next time I'll bring another 14,000 laptops.
Laptops, I was just about to say.
I caught you a delicious bass. I want La Fonda.
I'll take any of them, Kip. I follow the actor that plays Uncle Rico.
All right, Jeff, this is your turn for Jump in the Fire. Spell the correct version of La Fonda.
L-A-F-A-W-N-D-U-H. La Fonda.
Ding, ding, ding.
All right.
And in the next scene, Kip is all gangster, and he's like, we're going to go get prime rib. Peace out.
Yeah, peace out, Napoleon.
Well, I don't even think I'm going to edit this.
Nope.
I'm looking forward to our guest. We got Richard in the green room. You ready to bring him in?
Let's bring him in, man. It's going to be a fun night.
I don't know where this is going. It's going to be Metallica. It's going to be his bro. We're going to talk a little Oakland San Fran. Maybe we'll talk about the Golden State Warriors. Here we are. Please welcome to a podcast for all from the East Bay, Mr. Richard LeCong. Hey, Richard, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man.
You know what's interesting is I've seen you all over Facebook. We've got tons of mutual Facebook friends. I think Jeff can see the same that we've seen you before.
Yep.
And we've seen you in all these cool Metallica settings, and I finally had to reach out and just say, dude, tell us your story. Tell us your connection to Metallica, because you've got all these backstage passes and cool experiences. Tell our listeners and all the Metallica fans who you are, Richard.
Well, basically, I'm just like a photographer, and I worked for years at industrial and advertising photographer for Chevron Research.
Okay.
And then there was the scene going on in San Francisco in the Bay Area. It was like the punk and new wave scene and the metal mm-hmm. scene was starting to flourish. And so what happened was is that I was like this security guy at these punk shows at a club called the Fab Mab, which is for a Filipino restaurant called Mabuhay. So all these punk kids from the San Francisco Art Institute, they would like do their crazy shows. So I started hanging out there, and I started meeting a lot of people. And it got so interesting that I remember these guys with short hair. You know, they're punkers. And so then there was mm-hmm. this other, my brother, he was, he got into Metallica, and he was telling me that, hey, man, we're going to, like, play at the Stone. This, you know, it's which is across the street from the Fab Mab. So I go, you want to come? I go, yeah. So I went to check it out. And so the irony of it was like all these punk kids who had short hair went to see Metallica and they started growing their hair long. It was just getting a little long, you know, and it was, that was significant.
Just like Jeff's hair over here.
It was the merge of the punk and the metal scene. And all these bands came out of nowhere. I mean, they just...
And what year was this?
This is back in 80, 81, around there. I might be wrong, but there was a lot of people before that started merging punk and metal shows in an area called Berkeley. This one guy named Wes Robinson, he did shows on the Eastern Front. So he would get all these punk bands and metal bands, and they'd be on the same stage. And some didn't like it, and some just fell in love with it. And so this merging scene started hitting the whole San Francisco Bay Area. So when I came in, my big thing was there was these punk shows at this club, was at several clubs and churches and stuff, that I got involved by being security. My big thing was take the kids, I'd be in the bathroom, and take kids when they're like writing, doing, tagging the walls, I would take the pins away from them. I said, don't do that.
Oh, okay.
So I'd be in the back going, wow, man, this is really exciting. I mean, you could barely hear the music. And my favorite band at the time was X, you know, down there from L.A. They got a Decline of Western Civilization. They're that big yep. band down there. So the scene started merging. It started merging, and I saw these kids later on when I was still doing my security thing, you know, big job. They started wearing these, started getting these, how do you say, it was Motorhead. So they started doing, you know, safety pins and all that. And they had Motorhead in back of their, you know, they put it on
like their back patches.
Who's Motorhead? And they go, oh, man, they're from England, man. They're really good, man. They're really good. So I go, okay. And so then they Motorhead played in at this place in San Francisco. So I called my brother up and, hey, man, this band called Motorhead, we got to check them out. And so my brother goes, oh, man, I don't want to see those guys, man. They kind of played too fast for me. I go, okay, that's cool. You know, I mean, that was the beginning.
Too fast.
Things started merging, man, you know. So I got involved in the whole thing. And so I remember when Metallica first came, well, there was two clubs, the Fab Mab, and then that was that Filipino restaurant and day, and then it was like a punk club at night. Across the street was called the Stone, and that's when they started doing metal shows.
Okay.
So the Punkers were on one side, and the Metalheads were on the other side, and you could see bottles flying towards each
Wild.
Other. It's like they hated each other. And but then eventually they all dismerged, you know. And so Metallica came in. My brother calls me up. I was a photographer for Chevron Research. He says, hey, man, we're going to be in the Bay Area. You got to check it out. I go, yeah, it's cool, man. So then I went to go see him. And the first time I seen them at the Stone, and I was up there front, and I had my cameras and stuff. So first time I seen James and Lars. You know, and all that. And so during rehearsal, it fucking blew me away. I mean, it absolutely blew me away. I go, man.
And at the time, who was playing lead guitar?
Yeah, Kirk, you know, he's there. He got into the band. You know, he started you probably know his story was that he was asked by Metallica to come and try out for the band. So mm-hmm. My mom gave him a bunch of money. He took a Greyhound bus to New York, and then that's all he had, man. And he walked in the room, he plugged in his guitar, and of course, Stain was in the other room. And then the story goes, they told Miss Stain, you're out of the band.
Right.
I mean, you know what I mean?
What do you mean I can't get to work on time? Got nothing better to do.
So the first time you saw him, Kirk was playing with him.
Yeah. And so okay. That's what happened. Then they, Kirk, the Metallica, they came into the Bay Area and they played and started playing clubs here.
Did you ever see him in Exodus?
Yeah, I saw them in Exodus because as what happened was I got my brother a job, and part of the job was I worked at a Filipino community agency. So they're hiring kids. So I got my brother to get a job.
Okay.
And so he was in Exodus, and he just started wearing, you know, the whole metal thing and all that. And so, about a few years later, I did a picture for them. It was Exodus, and it had Paul Bailoff, had all the original members and all that. So I did a photo composite of the band. And so I made 20 copies, and then I gave it to my brother, and his girlfriend at the time put them on the table. You know, when people walk in, they go, oh wow, what's this, Metallica, and then Exodus. And then the next thing you know, they sold it was all gone, all those 20 photos. That was part of the scene, you know. It was like
it went fast.
It was called the Old Waldorf. And they started opening up the music to all this emerging scene and stuff.
Well, Richard, after that introduction and telling all our people that great story, can you tell everyone who your brother is?
Oh, my brother is Kirk Hammond.
There we go.
And
oh, hey, surprise.
Sorry, I didn't say that in the beginning, you know, it was just...
Just so, as easy as that. That's what we were leading up to. I love it.
So it was a thing where we had the same mom but different father. See.
Okay.
My dad died when I was 5, and then my mom remarried.
What year was that?
Pardon me?
What year did your mom remarry?
Oh, I guess when I was like 11 years old. I forgot the year.
So you are truly the older brother of the two of you.
I'm the old dude.
And then Kirk moved in with you during that era?
The family moved to the East Bay. you see. And then Kirk, after I got him this job, he got another job at Burger King. You know, so he was living his high school life, and a lot of young emerging bands. They were just like starting to get into the music. One of his closest friends was Les Claypool, a Primus. Yep. I seen this photo of Les in high school, and there was all these young metal bands, you know, like Blind Illusion. Then there was Les and all that, and then there was Exodus. You know, so they'd go to this park, which is actually not too far away from where I live. And Alvarado Park, it was called. And then they would have jams and stuff. So they were kind of like learning off each other, you know, just doing their thing.
Les Claypool jamming with the metal guys. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome, man. I mean.
Do you remember much of Kirk's playing through like junior high and high school when he wasn't working at Burger King?
Yeah, he would. This is the funny thing. Is that I would come to the East Bay and visit him, and he was such into Kiss and all these, he was just a young kid, man, and all these bands and stuff like that. And I told him, man, you gotta look at the blues. I mean, you gotta see where it came from, man, you know, and stuff.
Right.
And we just kind of argued, but then I thought, oh, he's just a kid. What the hell does he know? He doesn't know what the hell is going on. It wasn't until later in life. That's why I brought you that tape.
Yeah, that was great, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jeff checked it out as well.
Yep, it was awesome.
Yeah. So that was the thing while I was in film school. And so I got my, one of the producers asked me if I could get my brother to be a part of the film, to perhaps invest. And so this guy's name was Josh, and I was part of the Grammy people, National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences. So I asked my brother, and he was interested in all that, but, you know, he just wanted to know where the details were, all the details, because they were, by that time, Metallica was starting to really get big, and he was willing to do it, you know what I mean? So in the film, the video clip, you could see we interviewed him twice, and so he just did it for free, you know. But we came across some problems with the Howlin' Wolf's granddaughters. They wanted, we had to stop filming and stuff. I mean, there was money invested. Smokestack Lightning, I don't know if you can still see it and all that, but we had Bill Wyman and the Stones.
Wow.
You know, and the crew went all the way to England, and they interviewed, Jimmy Page and all that. And we had all the elements there, but then the granddaughters of Howlin' Wolf, they just kind of like stopped. And so it's been a few years, and I haven't heard what the hell is going on.
So this was your project, and it sounds like you've been in photography and the video world your whole life.
Yeah, I was basically an industrial advertising photographer for Chevron. So I would shoot punk shows on the weekend and hang out. And it wasn't until there was a band called Blind Illusion and stuff. So I started shooting them, and Metallica was coming around, and so Cliff, he liked my pictures. He goes, "Well, man, you gotta start shooting more metal shows, man." And I thought about it. Yeah, I guess so. I think I'll do that.
Way cool.
So one thing led to another, and I just started, from my straight job as a photographer, I started shooting different kind of rock shows, and then I actually had an agent, and I would shoot a lot of other big rock acts and stuff.
Good for you. So Cliff was digging your work early on.
Oh, yeah. He, when RE Guitars wanted to, he called me up. He goes, "Well, come on over. I got RE Guitars, you know." So then James was over at the house, and I shot him with the RE acoustic guitar, and then with Cliff and his guitar. And so the funny thing about it is that when you go to Cliff's house, he would pin up all these pictures that people took, and he took a lot of my pictures, and he hung them up on the wall.
What an honor.
Yeah, so I really miss Cliff because he was my brother put, you know, said you should get into it, you know, and he helped me along. But Cliff was the guy that triggered me and says, man, you just got to go out there and shoot more metal.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about over at the house, was that El Cerrito?
Yeah, it's in El Sobrani, which is close to El Cerrito.
Oh, this was Cliff's place, not the Metallo Mansion.
Oh, yeah. Cliff's place is in Castro Valley. The El Cerrito, this famous El Cerrito house, is where the band stayed.
Yep, I've been there.
James and Lars.
So you were there in the early days for all those wild parties?
Yeah, it was crazy, man. I mean, the last day of when Metallica was, they were going to move out and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I called Lars to go, Lars, rumor has it that there's going to be a party at the house. He goes, no, man, I don't know what you're talking about. There ain't no party anywhere, man. I don't know. And I had, and I was living in Santa Rosa at the time when I got my friends. And so we're like driving around going, there's got to be this party. So then we drive up and there's all these people at the Metallica house. And then Lars comes up to me and goes, Rick, I didn't know there was a party here. He goes, ha, ha, ha. You know, I mean, he was that kind of jokester kind of guy.
Oh, Rick, what's going on here, huh?
So we walk in there, and you know, I go, man, goddamn Lars, man. Sometimes he pisses me off, you know?
I guess it's good to know that some things never change.
Yeah.
Because he seems like he's still quite the pranker.
He's a good pranker, man. I mean, he loves to play that role, you know.
As Kirk's your brother, and you see this, you know, basically from the start when he flew out to New York to replace Dave.
Yeah.
I mean, kill them all to ride the lightning to Master Puppets just in a few years. You were along for that entire ride. That had to be something to witness.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting because all along the way, you're just kind of riding with that. I didn't see things until they started getting... Well, actually, their first manager, they did a show at that club I called it Stone. And I remember the first manager and all that. And I was like getting ready to shoot them. And then Lars asked the manager if he could have $25. And the guy goes, no, man, you already had your, you know what I mean? You already got your pay and all that stuff. And I looked at him and go, wow, man. And I'm thinking, this life, man, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. But then when they went on stage, when they were just like rehearsing, and James just freaking blew me away.
Absolutely.
I mean, I was like, just sat there, my mouth wide open, man. And I just said, oh, my God. This band is getting...
Were you at the rehearsals at the Metallica Mansion?
Well, that's the El Cerrito house. It's
right.
Just a regular house, middle class, you know. So I, when I went to England, my brother says, come to England, we're doing a big concert, Monsters of Rock. So there was all these bands that played, you know, what's his name, Bon Jovi, all these different bands and all that. So I came along, there's a picture, I'll get the picture and I'll show it to you. So me and my brother are just walking around and all that. Someone took a picture of us.
Oh,
so
cool.
It was this big rock concert, you know, before it came Monsters of Rock in the U.S. But it was really interesting to see all these bands. And then I saw, at that time, I saw Lemmy, you know, and his little group and stuff. Actually, the headliners were ZZ Top. They were the main
one of Cliff and Kirk's favorites.
Yeah. And so the funny thing is, like, my pass was only allowed to shoot Metallica. So I went underneath the stage and there was all these beer cans. And it was a big mess, you know. And I'm a little, well, I wasn't straight. I was just a little drunk and stuff. So I'm walking through, avoiding all these beer cans. And who do I see about 10 feet away from me? I see James. He's doing the same thing, man. And we looked at each other. We just started laughing. You know, we're going to try to get up on stage so we can see ZZ Top. But I didn't get on. I don't know if he ever got on stage, you know, somehow, you know, because we were just like, Metallica was just like one of the opening bands.
Sure, sure. You know?
And I'll show you a picture that, so when I was shooting there, I got this picture of Cliff, and then someone's holding a Metallica flag, the audience stuff, and, you know, it was like one of my favorite photos. And what happened was this lady appears out of nowhere by the photo pitch because, oh, Bon Jovi's ready to take pictures. And Ross Halfland, big rock photographer, and all these other photographers, they just took off, sure. Man. And I sat there, just, loyal motherfuckers, you know what I mean? So I just stayed there, and I shot this picture, and I got a good one, a clip. So
awesome.
It was also in the book, the Metallica copy book, Back to the Front. If you
yep, great it, book.
On page 90 or something like that. But I'll show you the picture that I took and all that.
Jeff, I think Richard has better pictures than Ross Helfen.
Right?
Well, don't say that. You know, I mean, I like Ross. You know, he's a nice guy, you know. And he was always the rock photographer. I was went to school to be a photojournalist, and then I got into industrial stuff. So we came from different paths. But, you know, Ross is something else, to say the least.
Oh, he's a legend. You just think of how many bands we've seen in the past 40 years, and 90% of the pictures of our favorite bands are from Ross's camera.
Exactly. You know.
Amazing.
Amazing.
So Kurt goes on his way, and then you go on your way, and what do you do for the next 30 years, Richard?
So I went back to school. I mean, within the last, I got my master's in multimedia.
Oh, nice. You
know, emphasizing video. Then I went to film school, the Academy of Art College, and studied screenwriting and cinematography. So that's where that
awesome
that piece you saw of my brother. It was actually just for school.
That was just a project for school that you made.
That was that just clip a project you sent for us? School, and I was just shooting it, you know. So I just did that, you know, and stuff. And so then it got a little bit more serious, and so the producers asked me to join in more of a producer after that.
It was very cool. As I was watching that video, he's playing some riffs and some doodles in there. Jeff, you probably know this material better than I do, but some of those little riffs he was noodling on, I swear, are in the year and a half in the life documentary.
Very bluesy riffs that he was playing, and especially at that time, you know, let's face it, Kirk's always playing the blues.
Yeah.
Blues or little, you know, Hendrix doodles. Some of that stuff sounded very familiar from, like, tunings and warm-up rooms and even some studio warm-ups.
I'm sure they're just, you know, standard jams that he just always goes to when he picks up a guitar. I know every time I pick up my guitar, I have my same few chords and runs and little doodles that I do just out of, like, muscle memory.
Just out of habit.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Richard, Jeff and I play in a Metallica tribute band, so Jeff is actually Kirk okay. of our band.
That's cool. Was this in Minneapolis or something? Or?
All around the world, actually.
Really?
Yep, total tribute to our favorite metal band. So we love talking metal, we love talking Metallica, and we love hearing from people like you that have a real story, and we're close to the early days action. So when I've seen your pictures, you know, at all the special events, I'm like, we got to talk to this guy. This guy's got some stories.
Yeah. Thanks.
I saw you at S&M2. I saw you at the Metalla Mansion on a Record Store Day a few years ago, and they had that party. I mean, you've been everywhere, man.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's just like I was a guy at the right place at the right time, you know. And it's funny because when we went to England, the Monsters of Rock, I borrowed $100 from Lars and stuff. And I go, oh, man, I got to pay this guy back. So I went to that Metallic house in El Cerrito and all that. So they're just Kirk. No, I mean, just James and Lars were jamming. And I didn't go in there immediately in the garage. You know, beat up garage. I stayed outside for 15 minutes and listened to them jam. I go, holy shit. I mean, come on, man. You know, and then so after hanging out, I knock on the garage door, and then they stop. And so then, hey, what's up, man? You know, what's up? I go, oh, hi, Lars. I'm here to give you your money back. Okay, man, thanks, you know. And I looked at James, and he just said hi and all that. But there was this incredible bond that they have. You know, those
it had to be
bounce off each other.
It had to be incredible. You saw him play at Monsters of Rock in Europe, and then a couple weeks later, you're listening to him in a tiny garage.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's always, it's been pretty cool. And, I see myself pretty fortunate, you know. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
So it was like a thing where I would shoot the rock shows, and then when Chevron had to buy out people and all that, and I was basically laid off, and that's when I got into the music industry.
Awesome.
I started managing bands and started shooting more shows and stuff, and was just watching this whole scene grow.
It was so cool that you got to witness it from the start, from the very beginning, especially in the Bay Area.
Yeah, yeah.
So is metal still your favorite?
Yeah, I listen to, my favorite, actually I was raised around jazz and funk, so I pretty much listened to everything, because that's the way I was raised. I mean, my heroes were like, you know, Hendrix and Cream, like, I, you know, but it was like once I started digging into where that music came from, you know, I started getting into the blues thing, you know, and just seeing where the roots of all that. So I pretty much listened to everything, you know, but I would have to say hard rock, blues, and metal is my thing. But I also listened to a lot of like jazz, see, when I was growing up, because my parents were really into jazz. And so, you know, when I was living in Gilroy and all that, and my mom, for my birth, Jesus, I was like 11 years old, they got me a little transistor radio, and I'm listening to a station called KYA, which is basically big band jazz music and stuff. So, nice. You know, I got this little tiny radio, and I wanted to meet some new friends, and, you know, they started talking to me, and go, what are you listening to? Oh man, KYA and stuff. They go, well, you gotta listen to some rock and roll, man. And I go, okay, you know, you just want to be friends, right? You go, so that's what kind of like switched me.
You're like, dude, I got my jazz and my Cream. What more do I need?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we have fans, and, you know, there's another people on that are big Metallica people, Richard. We always ask them their first memory of Metallica, but I think, God, your first memory's got to be from the very beginning. So I'd like to ask you, what's your favorite Metallica memory coming up on the past 40 years? Or maybe your top moment? Anything you want to tell us that's been your favorite that stuck out over, okay, God, four decades?
Okay. This is my favorite. So, they were working on Masters of Puppets. So I came to visit my brother in the East Bay and stuff. So I walked upstairs, and he was like, playing these riffs, and he goes, hey Rick, what do you think of this riff? So he played this riff. I go, yeah, that sounds good. Then he played a second riff. He goes, oh yeah, that's cool. I go, that's for the new album? He goes, yeah. So which one do you like? Oh, I like the second one. So that ended up on Masters of Puppets, you know.
Jeez.
That riff that I just kind of like, yeah, that sounds cool, man, just pick, use that, you know.
He's like, I'll take my writing credit now.
I was just going to say, can Mr. Lee Kong get a writing credit on that song? Do you happen to remember the song, Richard, or no?
So, you know, it's just one of those things. You just kind of walk into a situation. It's always been like that. Like, I'm just a guy who's in the situation. I'm not planning it, you know.
Sure. Just timing.
Well, just kind of like happened.
Richard, we're going to go through a little rapid fire we do with our guests. Is that okay?
Yeah, okay.
It's called rapid fire!
All right, here we are with Richard Lee Kong and rapid fire. His mummy guitar or the Ouija board?
Mummy guitar.
his perm or his 1994-1995 dreadlocks?
Oh, God, that's a tough one. the dreadlocks, and I saw him in the kitchen with it. I go, hey, man, people are starting to call you Rasta Kirk, you know.
Rasta Kirk. They call him Kirk Marley, like Bob Marley.
You know, and so I'm in the kitchen. I'm looking at him going, oh, man, okay, that's cool, whatever, you know.
Ooh.
But I'm glad it didn't last that long.
Yeah, I wish we knew the reasoning why he decided to go that route before just axing it all off.
I want to say it was like late 93 to like 95.
You know, it just threw me off, you know.
The Unforgiven solo or the Master of Puppets solo?
Oh, Unforgiven.
I'm with you. The Dracula movie or the Frankenstein movie?
Oh, the Frankenstein movie.
Hardwired album or the original Kill 'Em All?
Oh, that's putting me in a spot, man. Because,
I know, man. It's what you get a rapid fire.
The Kill 'Em All.
I knew you were going to say that.
He has to go with the classics, you know?
Hey, when you were there for that, Jeff, you got to go with Kill 'Em All.
Right.
We were all here for Hardwired, but there was only a few during Kill 'Em All.
Absolutely.
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 How about some memories with Cliff that were maybe non-Metallica related?
Cliff would stay at the house, you know, my mom's house, and hang out with my brother and all that. So I came walking in. I had to work late, so I didn't feel like driving back to San Francisco. So I walked in the front room, and there's Cliff playing the guitar. He goes, hey, man. I go, whoa. Hey, what's up, Cliff? And then he was just playing, and I just sat there. Go, God, this guy's pretty freaking good, you know?
Yeah, he's okay.
And but I would have to say his music theory, he knew more than the band. Yeah.
Sure.
So he was like, he was there. He was there, you know, and so he supported me in a lot of other ways too. And that's what I miss about him. You know, he was always there as a real nice guy.
That seems to be, you know, from, you know, the millions of stories that all of us know as Metallica fans from Cliff, that always seems to be a common theme, caring and giving and there for you and would give the shirt off his back if he needed to.
Yeah, you know, Cliff was, there was one shot, I'll never forget, I'm trying to look for it now because the, I try, you know, Ray Burton bless his soul, he died and all that, you know, and because there was a shot, I'm looking for it, it's like, you know, usually the typical headbanging shots with Cliff, it was like a big wave, right? But I shot this picture in black and white, and I got Cliff and, like, the hair was straight back. And it looked like somebody put gel on his head, on his hair, so it was straight back. And I go, man.
Hey, there's his face.
Yeah, you could see his face, but then he was like, this hair was pushed back, you know. So I go, man, so I've been actually trying to look for that photograph. Because I heard from his ex-girlfriend that Cliff would, like, always change the pictures. And she doesn't know. She remembers the photo, but she doesn't remember what happened to it. So, you know, with Ray Burton passed away, and I know the people who handle his estate and all that, I don't know. They don't know where it is. It's one of those lost photos, you know,
wow.
Something that I really wanted because... When I would see Cliff, I'd go, man, I love that photo, man. You know what I mean? It's so different from all the other photos, you know.
Awesome.
That's cool.
We have a little segment here. We call it End Voting for All. We take two different, you know, categories and we kind of make you vote between one of them. Tonight, we got an interesting little battle up here. So, of course, you know, Metallica is known for putting out an endless list of amazing songs, albums, you know, all of that. But there are a couple controversial albums that they have put out. Tonight, I'd like you to pick between one of the two, between the Lulu album and the Saint Anger album.
Saint Anger.
Saint Anger?
Yeah.
All right. That's everyone that listens to this show knows that that would be my vote, of course. But those are definitely the two most controversial albums they've put out. I mean, let's face it, both have some great riffs on them.
Some amazing riffs, and Kirk came up with some of the lyrics.
Right. Yeah. How about you, Shane? Which one would you pick?
Oh, I got to go with the Pounding Red Fist at Saint Anger all the way.
The Street Anger?
Got to go with that.
Be interesting to see what everybody votes for on this one.
Hey, Kirk stood up for himself and he said, I don't want to do solos on here. I just want to riff and I just want to thrash out, and this is who I am right now.
I came to party.
Richard, I see you're rocking a Golden State Warriors hat.
Yeah.
They're in San Francisco now. They switched sides of the bay. Was that good luck or bad luck?
They went back and forth to San Francisco and then to Oakland. Now they're back in San Francisco. And
a lot of history there.
Yeah, you know, so it's just like it's the Warriors and they represent the Bay Area. So I don't see it as a division between San Francisco and or the East Bay.
There you
I
go.
Just want them to keep winning championships. That's all I'm concerned about.
There's no East versus West here, man. It's all about the love of the game.
Oh, man. It's funny because when they did S&M 2 at the Chase, you know, where the Warriors play and stuff like that, I walk in there and going, shit, man, I got to go to a Warriors game. You got to check this out, man. I was like looking around. My oldest son was with me. We were just walking around going, this is a pretty classy place, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, all right, I could get used to seeing basketball here.
I was there that same weekend, Richard. I thought, man, the Chase Center is a little bit of an upgrade from Oracle.
Yeah, exactly.
Holy cow, that's a beautiful building. And so cool that Metallica got to open it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, before we wrap this up, Richard, is there anything Metallica or Kirk Hammett related that the rest of the world doesn't know about that you want to share with us on in Podcast for All?
Let's see.
If you've got a dynamite pinnacle story about your brother or the band, go ahead and share. The floor is yours.
I'm trying to do a G-rated thing here. Let me think.
Okay.
I would have to say that it's hard for me to say. I mean, I've been to so many shows, you know.
After a while, they probably all start to just kind of blend together.
Well, yeah. That's exactly. It's like, you know, so I only see them when I can, and it's a big event, you know, and then you just kind of like see the other bands as well, and it's just that whole experience, you know, of seeing other musicians doing their thing. And it's just, I've been very fortunate, and it's an honor to see all the other acts too, you know, because they, what they do is like for the fans, you know, I mean, if there's one memorable thing that I think is that when the Monsters of Rock, when ZZ Top played, they had their entourage. And they didn't look like a typical rock family. I mean, kids looked like normal kids. You know, they're all from Texas and stuff like that. And it was like, it really felt like a family thing. It didn't look like, oh, here comes all the rock stars and all of their like entourage. But it was just like a day in the park with ZZ Top, and everybody's just enjoying themselves. And then I'll never forget that feeling, because that led an impression to me about how rock stars, they're just like regular people in a lot of ways, and in a lot of ways they're not. But there's those elements of just going to a show and enjoying yourself. And that's why I enjoy the fans, because what they go through, I know so many stories of fans from all over the world with their difficulties and just coming to a show and stuff. And I wish I had the capacity to bring them all backstage sometimes, but I don't. And so it's just an honor to realize how good the fans are, because the bands, all the bands that I've seen besides Metallica, they're so close to their fans. It's incredible. Yeah. You know, they really care about how their fans feel and if they enjoy their music.
And I think that speaks a lot. I mean, you look at the last year and a half that we've been dealing with of how important music is and how important connecting people is and how important live music is. I think the last year and a half we've taken for granted and really opened our eyes to what we've been missing out on and how we really connect as fans.
Yeah, I think it brings me one last story. When I had to shoot the Red Hot Chili Peppers, I was on a mini tour with them and stuff. I co-promoted a show up and way up north in the Russian River area. And so they came and played at the famous Fillmore Auditorium, which I was backstage shooting pictures. And then I saw Kiedis, man. I mean, as a human, he was like so concerned, like, well, he talked to his other backup singers. He goes, Anthony was going, did I sound good? What do you guys think? And you see the vulnerability of an artist, and you just got to step back, and realize their fear. You just got to accept, you know, they go through so many changes, so many feelings like that. Even if you're famous, not famous, or just starting out, you're just an artist, and you want to make sure that people really enjoy your work. So when I looked at Anthony, man, I'm going, God damn, man. You know, I thought he sounded so great, but then he was that self-doubt, you know.
A lot of self-critique going on.
Yeah, I think it goes on with a lot of other artists. You know, they just they get those feelings of self-doubt, mm-hmm. You know. So I learned from that when I was managing bands and stuff like that, some of the bands, the fans would come up to them at these clubs and go, oh, man, you sounded so good, blah, 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 blah. And then the lead guitarist goes, oh, man, well, I made this mistake, I made that mistake, stuff like that. And so my wife at the time, she was co-managing with me, and we had a band meeting. I go, you know, these fans, they come up to you, and they don't want to hear, they just want to appreciate what you said, what you made right. them feel. Don't go there and give them every, like, well, gee, I skipped a couple notes or my riffs weren't as bad as I think they are. You don't want to hear that. They enjoyed the show. So that always left an impression with me is that, did you enjoy the show as fans? You know, simple as that.
Did you hear that, Jeff? Don't get down on yourself when you flub that solo in The Day That Never Comes.
I got it now.
Okay, you feel better.
Yep, I feel good.
And I'm over it.
You got to send me a clip, some audio tapes of you guys so I could listen to it, you know.
Absolutely. We'll send you our new promo.
Yeah, we're shooting a promo video this weekend in Minneapolis. That should probably be edited and done in about a month. I'll send it out to you.
Wow, that's pretty cool, man.
So, Richard, thank you so much for joining us. I know we've been messaging back and forth.
Hey, it's been fun, man.
Yes, thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome, you guys.
We'll keep in touch, and I'm sure I'll see you at another Metallica event when I'm in the Snake Pit and you walk past me with your all-access pass on.
All right, man. Same, man. I think you guys are cool. And so let me know if you're going to be at the show. I will come and see you guys in person.
Awesome, man.
Absolutely. It was great to talk to you, Richard. Thank you.
You guys are really cool. I really appreciate this.
Our paths will definitely cross.
All right. Sounds good.
Thanks again, Richard.
Nice talking to you guys.
All right, dude.
Bye.
What are you going to do today, Napoleon?
Whatever I feel like I want to do. Gosh!
Heck yes, I did.
Back in 82, I used to be able to throw a pigskin a quarter mile.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. Watch this.
What the heck are you doing?
That's what I'm talking about.
Tina, you fat lard, come get some dinner.
Hey, Napoleon. What'd you do all last summer again?
I told you, I spent it with my uncle in Alaska, hunting wolverines.
Did you shoot any?
Yes, like 50 of them. They kept trying to attack my cousins. What the heck would you do in a situation like that?
What kind of gun did you use?
A freaking 12-gauge, what do you think? Stay home and eat all the freaking chips, Kip.
Napoleon, don't be jealous that I've been chatting online with babes all day. Besides, we both know I'm training to become a cage fighter.
Your mom goes to college.
So are you ready?
Yeah, hold on. I forgot to put in the crystals. Okay, turn it on. It's a piece of crap. It doesn't work.
Well, I could have told you that.